Hi, today's April 14th, 2018. This is Mobile News Podcast 250. I'm Todd Ogasawara with my good friend John Westfall. And today we've got some special return guests. I'll do them alphabetically first name. They'll give the Sorcinelli a chance to be first at something.
So, it's so rare.
So first up,
it's a good day to give you that, the ability to be first.
frequent guest panelist Don Sorcinelli. Next up is somebody we haven't had on for a while, Jack Cook. He's a busy guy, and we've tried to get him on, but couldn't. And another frequent guest is Sven Johansson. And I want to say, you know, Don, I always lucked out because my last name is Ogasawara and my first name is Todd. So no matter which way they alphabetize it, I was always near the end of whatever the list was. So
I'd like to be first at anything, to be honest with you. Forget names, just anything. So I'll take the name.
There you go. And also, since we have in the show notes, happy birthday, Don. How many times have you been 29 now?
So many. I've lost more than 29.
Yeah.
No, about 29.
You've had a lot of practice being 29, so that's awesome. You know?
Yeah. I tried to be 29 before I was 29, and then I decided it was a good number, and I just stick there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, sometimes you find something good and just stay with it. Why not?
Yep.
Anyway, happy birthday, my friend.
Thank you.
So, really, there wasn't a lot of news in tech this week, at least news that interested me. But there was a one piece of news that did interest me, but it wasn't actually a news item. That's Jack got a new notebook, and I think we all wanted to hear about it. I don't think anybody else bought a Surface Book 2, did we? I didn't.
Nope.
Okay, Jack, tell us about your wondrous Surface Book 2.
Well, when the Surface Book originally came out, I mean, I really liked it, but I had just bought my Surface Pro 4.
Yeah.
And I couldn't justify getting another one so close to the Surface Pro 4. But then the Surface Book 2 came out. Get the fence time out.
Jack's breaking up.
Let me move closer.
Yeah.
How's that working?
Yeah, okay. Much better.
Okay. All right. So my good friend Richard Hay, he had two Surface Books there, and I was really impressed with what he was doing with them. Plus, he was using the precision mouse to switch it between them. And I just said, boy, I mean, I often, Terrence, would have two tablets on, and I'd have to have two mice and two sets of keyboards. And it was just a pain in the butt. I really liked it. And I was looking for the excuse to get a Surface Book. So I was going to buy it out there, and I said no, and I waited till I get back, and I kept thinking about it, and then I knew that I just wanted it. So
that is the sure sign when you're thinking about it more than you're thinking about other things in your daily life.
That's right.
Yep.
Right. So I went down to the Microsoft store and just did it. You know, I pulled the plug and pulled the wallet and emptied the wallet.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
But it's a really slick device. I mean, it boots so fast. I thought that my Surface Pro 4 booted fast. It's just amazing how fast it is. And what I particularly like about it is that the screen comes off, it turns around, then you can fold it down. And I could do that for 14 hours. It's a lot. Of course, I'd never do that, but I would do it for 4 or 5 hours.
Yeah.
And it's just the screen is, I got the 13.5. I thought the other one was just too big. A little extra weight that I just didn't care for. The only advantage would have been a better graphics processor, but I don't play any of those games that need that.
So yeah.
It just wasn't necessary. But I got the i7. It's the 512 is the memory, 16 gig of RAM, and it's just.
So you should be able to cook on the back of this thing, right?
It's
with the i7 in there.
Does it run hot?
It's not warm at all. It does not run warm. I mean, I think my Surface Book runs faster.
And how about the battery life on it? You know.
Well, so far, of course, it's a brand new battery. So, but I haven't even come close to burning out. Although more often than not, when I'm up here in my office, I always have it plugged in, but when I go downstairs, you know, if I take it, it just runs and runs and runs.
Yeah. How's the suspend time? You know, one of the problems I have with the Surface Pro 4 is even if I turn it off, I'm not putting it to sleep, I'm not, you know, I'm just turning it off. If I leave it, and my Surface Pro 4 is a work device, so I don't always bring it home on weekends. Was that Neely?
Yes, she's
hi, Neely. You know, if I turn off my Surface Pro 4 on a Friday afternoon before I go home, and I come back on Monday, the battery is like 60% when it's off, and it's fully charged when I turn it off.
Oh, I have never experienced that.
Yeah, no. I use the same sort of scenario as you, Todd, and I've not experienced that with my Surface Pro 4. I don't really charge it all over the weekend, and I've never noticed it being that low. Maybe you just are very hard on your Surface Pro 4.
It could be.
Of course, rest over the weekend.
Yeah. When you shut it off, it's fully charged?
Yes, fully charged.
And you shut it all the way off?
And I shut it all the way off. It's not in sleep.
Mine hasn't had that problem either. Mm. I don't have a Pro, I have a 3.
Yeah. I don't know. But, you know, and to Jeff, John, you know, my Surface Pro 4 is a bit older than yours. I think you got yours after I did.
Yeah, that's true. Mine... So maybe about 6 months newer than yours, I think.
Maybe my battery's going bad or something. I should have it checked out. Well, at any rate.
There's an app for that. If you Google it, there's actually something in the Surface Pro 4 and the 3 as well that keeps track of it, and they'll give you a whole report on your battery life.
Okay. Hmm. I'll go take a look at that one.
Bing it.
Bing it. Hey, I will tell you something. Well, this is not in the show notes, but since we brought up Bing. So, you know, I frequently make fun of Bing, and John usually laughs at my jokes. I think he has similar feelings about Bing. But, you know, I discovered something interesting the other day. So for whatever reason, I went to use Bing Maps. Don't ask why, I just did. And the thing I noticed that is, at least for Honolulu, if you go in at a certain zoom level, and it's fairly specific, not too close, not too far, but just right, Bing Maps links to the local traffic cameras. And so I can click on the camera and, you know, shows what the current traffic condition. I thought that was pretty cool. Google Maps does not do that. And it's not a Bing resource. It's a, you know, city and county resource that I'm looking at. So I thought that was a real nice integration.
Based on what you've told us for traffic in the area, I would think that showing you visually how bad it is would be a downside.
Well, I would think you could just use a static image of like 7,000 cars right in front of the camera, and it really wouldn't.
It wouldn't matter.
Well,
that's what they're doing. They're not telling you that. Yeah. Todd, I'm sorry.
We had at least to me, because the weather critters certainly didn't warn us, but we had quite a bit of rain last night here, and we were actually cut off from the rest of the island for several hours. The highway that cuts across our area was closed in both directions, and so there was no way in or out. So it literally was a parking lot.
How much rain did you get?
I don't know how many inches of rain we got, but there were video on the 10 p.m. news last night. There were video of some people about maybe a mile from where I live that had like I would say 6 to 10 inches of water in their living room.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. And the problem with the roads is the mud apparently came down from somewhere and hit the roads, and they had to, you know, get the mud off the roads. And I showed you a video just before we started with, you know, water overflowing the highway, and they had to stop. Well, you know, the highways are closed, so people were just kind of pulled over to the side, hoping they could get home sooner rather than later. But
and we had about 3 inches of snow last night.
Yeah, that is weird, by the way.
However, it was 70 degrees yesterday and 60 today, so it's already gone.
All melted off.
We're doing that. We're in the process of doing that now, Sven, where we were in the 60s on Friday, yesterday, and also on Thursday. And this morning I woke up, and like most of my neighbors were finally cutting all the dead trees and branches that came down during our March storms one after the other. I was out there with a chainsaw in a light shirt, and that was in the morning, and by midday I was freezing my butt off. And now tonight we're supposed to have freezing rain, and it's supposed to be like a high of 30 tomorrow. So yeah, I've given up on, you know, we mock and ridicule meteorologists. I've just given up in general. Nobody can predict what we're going to get anymore. It's just been a crazy winter.
Yeah. We had a 30-foot tree fall down in front of one of my neighbors last night too. So we had a bit of chainsaw action.
I realize that this is a riveting tech discussion on weather, but I kind of actually have a question about the Surface Book.
Okay.
We can go back to that for a minute. So one of the things that I found interesting as a Surface Pro 4 user for the last almost 2 years I've had mine is just that we haven't seen another Surface Pro in that time. And we've seen two iterations of the Surface Book.
I thought they released a Surface Pro, but it's not called the 5. It's just called the Surface Pro.
Yeah, it's not called the 5. Yeah. It's the Pro.
Okay.
The 5 is just called the Surface Pro.
Yeah.
So someone getting into the ecosystem now, since the Surface Book Pro or Surface Book can detach, and what is sort of the best option for someone getting into Surfaces? Because for a long time, I would have thought the Surface Pro, because it is designed to be more of a I would think, intuitive as a tablet, also universal device, where the Surface Book looks a little bit more like a traditional laptop. What do we recommend when friends say that they are interested in the Surface and they're not sure about the Pro or the Book?
I say MacBook Air.
HP Elite.
I'm a big tablet person, as you guys know. I love my first real tablet was my Samsung Series 7 Slate, which is still alive. And I'll never forget, Steve, we were sitting in the audience and Steve Ballmer came out carrying it, and I had just bought it the night before. So I was impressed. And that was...
He stole your tablet?
Wow. Yeah. You think you could afford his own.
He was quick about it, too.
I try to convince people, if you sit, if you go downstairs and you sit in the couch or something and you want to work on... on something, a tablet's the way to go.
Yeah. Now, Jeff,
I'd say the only drawback to the Book is that the vast majority of the battery is in the keyboard, half of it. They don't have as much battery in the top. And I don't know if you know, Jack, but the power connector, the little magnetic one, that will keep on the bottom of your tablet half.
Yes.
Yeah, a lot of people with Surface Books don't know that you can take the tablet off and power that, just the tablet part.
Oh yeah. But I mean, it's more than 4 hours.
Is it? The top by itself. But
didn't they divide the processor? I mean, part of the processor is in the keyboard part, and part of it is in the tablet part.
The GPU.
Yeah.
If it has one, is in the keyboard app.
Oh, if it has one, not all of them have it.
Not all of them do. Not all of them.
Oh, I didn't know that. I thought all of them had that.
Yep. The digital GPU.
Hmm.
So, but the main processors, the i7, is in the screen.
I kind of think that it's funny because I kind of think of the Book as your principal use is more as a power use, and then the availability for the tablet when you want it, versus the Surface Pro, while still a pretty beefy device, is still more. I almost think of that as if you're twisting it and being a little bit more tablet focused or pen focused, that might be your better option. And then in all of this, we haven't even considered, and it'll be interesting to see if Microsoft does it too, is when you say a friend asks, I always ask, what are you going to use it for? And then ask, how much life do you want out of the battery, like you guys were discussing? And do you look at one of the Windows on ARM devices now?
Oh, no. Yeah.
Because are getting a boatload of battery life. And if principally you're, what Microsoft called years back, the information worker, you're not trying to do any heavy duty stuff, but you're, the daily kind of thing. And you want a lot of battery life, that's another option. I'm curious to see if the next, we're talking about what comes next.
Yeah,
you're Microsoft with Surface.
Doing documents, you're looking at spreadsheets, stuff like that, reading mail, answering stuff. And you can get 14 hours out of this on a plane flight.
Yeah.
Those would be ideal.
And I'm kind of wondering... because we were just talking about what's the next potentially Surface Pro device. I wonder if Microsoft themselves come out with one, or if they leave it just to the OEMs to come out with one. But I'd be curious to see if they jump on and have a Surface Pro that's a Windows on ARM.
You know, which would be kind of like the old Surface 3, which was a really nice... I mean, not that it was an ARM, but it was a nice starter device. I know Frank McPherson bought one and really likes it.
I have one.
Yep.
I use that more than anything else I got. Yep.
So it would be nice, but the problem is the Windows on ARM devices are kind of pricey, right? Don't they start at like $599?
Yeah. Well, yep. They're not... Understand the fact that you can run 32-bit apps on them. It's not RT. Yeah. You know, we're not talking about strictly limited. Yeah. Granted, you know, people are saying some of the apps are obviously if you turn around and upgrade it to and do Pro and you try to run memory intensive 32-bit apps, it's kind of rough. Microsoft had just announced that they're giving they had announced it a while back, but they re-announced it just to emphasize. They're going to give developers the opportunity, if they're developing using Visual Studio, to compile their apps not only for 32-bit classic Intel. They're also going to give the ability eventually to do 64-bit ARM compilation.
Yeah,
which will be interesting because those are 64-bit ARM. The Snapdragons they're using are 64-bit.
Yeah, so then it'll be a native app.
To see what the performance of those apps might be.
Yeah, too. Yeah. I think Windows on ARM is not quite ready for prime time unless you're an early adopter or you need the battery life. Or
that's what I was going to say. Yeah. I won't say if I won't limit it to early adopters because I will tell you that there is a market of people who live in Excel, Word, and Mail, and browse the web, and that's what they do. They're not us, but there's a lot of them, and a lot of them want that long battery life too.
Yeah. And I did. I was listening to the Windows Weekly podcast, and those folks have the Windows on ARM devices, and they were saying that basically the Microsoft apps work pretty well, you know, run pretty fast. But if you go to third-party 32-bit apps, they're a little bit sluggish. So, yeah, I think
depends
you're right.
Depends on the app.
Yeah.
They're even saying the Office apps that are compiled for the store run quite well, and those are essentially full Word and Excel and everything.
Right.
So it's not just the the little mobile.
Right.
Yeah. Word, I get worried. I do get worried when we look at something and then our lenses start to become, well, I want to run this. I want to run that. So it isn't. I right now work in a company where there are 1,400 people. I can tell you 1,200 of those people probably could do well with that device and be happy with, you know, or the vast majority of them would be happy the vast majority of the time.
For me, though, you know, it's all about the cost. I mean, at that point, right? If I'm not going to get the performance. If I don't really need the battery life, I can get a really nice Windows 10 device, a laptop, for $599. I mean, I can get a really nice Windows laptop these days for $599 that runs full Windows 10.
Yeah, I think you're looking at smaller devices. If you go for the ARM stuff, you're going to get very thin things like, Surface weight, whereas that $599 thing is probably, three-quarters of an inch thick, made out of plastic.
I do agree that HP's overpriced theirs. It's a gorgeous piece of hardware, but it's overpriced.
Yeah.
And I think somebody that's kind of an example of milking the market, trying to take advantage. I believe
if you
price
want one,
point,
here you go.
Yeah. I believe the price point probably ends up, again, depending on 4 gig versus 8 gig. But I figure the $599 to $799 sweet spot, if you give good, a nice screen, decent, lightweight, and you give somebody the battery.
Yeah.
That they want.
Yeah.
That's the big one. In highly mobile environments, and I'm talking, everybody says, oh, that just needs traveling. I can tell you, I am in a situation now where I work in an office where almost everybody that uses a laptop tends to use it a lot away from a power supply on a work day. They're always moving around and they're always in meetings. And it was the same thing that was supposed to be addressed a decade plus ago with tablets, for the highly mobile information worker. But what we got was a PC that had some cute functionality and still crummy battery life.
Well, what we got was a tablet PC that was really made for cooking pancakes. I mean,
yeah.
Or if it didn't cook pancakes, like I said, it was sluggish and
yeah.
there was no apps yeah. that ran well on it, and it had no battery life.
Yeah.
And I had an Acer Travel Mate that was very lightweight. I loved it, except for the fact that it was underpowered and it only got a couple hours of battery on
yeah.
it.
Going back, I still have that Acer Travel Mate.
I have mine someplace. C104 was
going back to the original.
That was a C110.
Going back to the original question, I think that if you can afford it, you know, you should get a Surface Book 2. If you can't afford it, the Surface Pro, not 5. Is probably in a good lightweight option. If you can't afford that, you know, something like the HP Envy or the Dell X3 line. And yeah. I don't know what Lenovo's equivalent is, but they seem to all look pretty good. I had a Dell X3 something in my last job, and I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah. You know, no, there's, you know, Lenovo, all of them have put out some gorgeous hardware.
Yeah.
The days of, and it cracks me up, even Dell, even in their Latitude line, which was always the business line.
Right, right.
And I'm sitting here in front of one right now. I'm using one. And they were big and boxy and heavy. And their 7400 series is Ultrabook in its weight. And it looks nice. I mean, we're reaching that point to where even the commoditized ones aren't clunkers and, you know, big, bulky, you could beat somebody to death with them type of laptops anymore. Yeah.
Well, it's interesting to me to see what a lot of companies that I've noticed did in the last 5 years, and that was gravitate away from some of the OEMs because their hardware just wasn't that good towards the Surface line. And now you've got a lot of Surfaces deployed, and now some of those companies are starting to gravitate back toward the OEMs because the OEMs start making hardware that was a higher quality.
Well, if you believe what Microsoft was always saying as at least one of the messages, the purpose of the Surface was to try, was at least in part, reference design.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And traditionally what's happened in the marketplace, in Microsoft's dealing with partners on hardware and reference designs, usually it's ignored flat out. And you're right. In the case of the Surface line, initially it was pretty much ignored. But the success has now, as you said, hey, this time, you know, fool me 20 times, I guess, for the OEMs. This time around, they're finally, you know, it seems like they're getting on board with it. Yeah. And like it's two parts to it. It's good hardware. And they're not trying to take you to the cleaners on it anymore.
Yeah.
You know, the days of buying, don't get me wrong, I love it. It's like the XPS series from Dell.
Oh, yeah.
It was like you were buying a gaming rig, you know, and the specs weren't that justified. But now they've introduced at a number of levels some really solid hardware.
Okay. So the next item I wanted to move to is something I suspect Jack put in there because he probably follows this more than us. Windows 10 Mobile got an update?
Yep, it was me.
Oh, that was you?
You made the update, Don? That's commitment.
I wrote it. I pushed it out. There it is. Yeah, it was funny. There was just recently, and it was kind of a discussion. It was part of what came out at the same time, even for Windows 10, the insiders, as we were all waiting for the next release of Windows 10, which we'll get to in a minute, what we want to call it. Because that's still somewhat nebulous. But at the same time, it was a cumulative that was done for a bunch of Windows 10 versions for vulnerabilities. And included in that was Windows 10 Mobile. Hmm. And I actually pulled out the old 640, my Lumia 640, and sure enough, boom, right away, actually got an update. So for what it's worth, while it's at feature 2, which means they're not giving feature updates anymore, they're still passing along if they see vulnerabilities or things like that. There's this little part of me that goes to sleep every night that says, I'd love for Windows 10 Mobile, for the insiders at least, to get one last update that adds service worker support and full PWA support for Microsoft Edge. Then I'd be a happy camper. I don't know that that's going to happen, though.
Hmm. So, well, that's good news for, you know, folks who...
Yeah, it's nice to see that you're still seeing security updates pushed. Yeah. Like I said, it was a number of... it addressed vulnerabilities. And they did to insider builds. They did to all the rings. They did to regular release builds. They pushed them all out. And it was, like I said, at the time, everybody was expecting... it seemed like everybody was fully expecting the next release of Windows 10 to be released, start to roll out on Patch Tuesday, and it turned out it wasn't. These were released instead, though.
Okay.
Yeah, so I still got a 950 and a 950 XL, and one of them I'm running on stock, and the other one is running insider builds, and yep. They both got. Yeah.
So before we get back to Windows 10, I wanted to move to Android, since Jack has some stuff there, I see. And I wanted to, I think, Don, you probably put in the security update problem for Android.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. This was this week we started to hear tell of a lot of news about, which, again, let me say first, we were hearing news, quote unquote, I'm doing the air quotes here for those on the podcast, about some of the OEMs not providing security updates or missing security updates.
Yeah, shocking.
Yeah, this, I don't know why this surprises anybody. This has been going on since Android first was released. And for a long time, it was because of the catch-as-can.
Yeah.
It was the Wild West. Even now, as Google tries to clamp down more and more on it, you know, and enforce it, it doesn't surprise me. And that includes, as somebody who has to manage Samsung's S6s, 7s, 8s, now 9s, I've seen them miss security updates. And sometimes, they're saying that the OEMs are responsible. I'll be curious to see if we don't find out the OEMs start pointing fingers at the carriers. And how long have we been dealing with that?
Right.
You know.
Well, the article you pointed out was in a 9to5 Google. Found an article in PC Magazine, which is no longer a magazine, but in PC Mag, and they name names. They say companies such as Google, Samsung, and Sony have the best record of installing patches. Well, and they specifically, they're all Chinese, whereas Chinese vendors, including Lenovo's Motorola, TCL, and ZTE, had trouble rolling it out. I'm sorry, Jack, you were going to say something?
No. Finish what you were doing.
Oh, okay. So, you know, it varies by vendor. And quite frankly, after my one foray into the Motorola Droid years ago, you might remember the first really successful Android phone, or at least widely publicized one, it only got updates for about... I bought it the day it was announced or available, and I got maybe 18 months of upgrades, mm-hmm. updates, and then it, you know, got nothing. So after that, I went to the Nexus and never looked back, and now Pixel.
Well, when my wife's Windows phone died, it was an HTC, I think it was an 8, HTC.
Yeah, the
8X, yep. Yeah, the 8X. It was old, but she loved the phone. And I kept saying to her for years, you know, you need a new phone, because she just wouldn't change. So finally, she was having difficulty. And we went down to Verizon because that's where she has her service. And we ended up getting the Samsung Galaxy Note 8. I'll tell you, there were a couple of choices there, but I just love the screen of it. It looked good. Unfortunately, it's different than going to the Microsoft store. When you go to a Microsoft store and you buy a phone, they sit down with you and they help you set it up.
Hmm.
And that's a huge advantage, whether or not you're getting a phone from them or a laptop or a tablet at the Microsoft store. They do amazing things for customers. But in any event, we brought it back, set it up, and I have to tell you, I was liking it, nothing intuitive. But all of a sudden, after it set up, I installed the Microsoft Launch program. And then along with all of the Microsoft apps, it just made all the difference in the world. It's a continuation of the Windows Phone with a touch of Android. It's just the comfort factor just immediately appeared. It was just amazing. And of course, she uses Outlook, Office, OneDrive, all those apps were there. We're able to get it all set up. A little bit of thinking. I wanted to be able to have the Android apps and the Microsoft apps all work the same way, but we were able to do it. So far, I mean, she really likes the phone. The screen is just stunning. Absolutely.
You know, it's funny with this talk about the, as we're talking about security updates and updates and being current, you know, they talk about Google, Samsung, and Sony having best record. I will say, in their limited time in the Android market, Nokia should be listed there as well. Nokia 6 is currently running Android 8.1 and has received every monthly patch since went back to when it was running 7. They push it out every, and that's an unlocked, no carrier involved. They make sure to push them.
I will say that the first couple of days of her having her phone, she had all kinds of updates. Then it gets smooth, and then every once in a while she gets an update. She's only had it for 2 months now.
Hey, Jack.
Yes.
Let me take you off. I'm looking at the Microsoft Store. Could have got your Samsung Galaxy Note 8 there.
Not for Verizon.
Oh.
Really? They have an unlocked version, so you can throw whatever SIM in there. You can throw SIM in it.
So the interesting thing, Jack, about that is, and I found, because you've got Verizon, do yourself a favor. Make sure, because the Samsungs are this way. I work with a lot of users in the enterprise that every month, you know, when Samsung does put out a security, you know, they roll out and it goes through Verizon to get the monthly security updates.
Right.
A lot of people tend to ignore those. Unlike the Windows world where things are cumulative.
Yeah.
They're not that way for your updates for Android. And I can't tell you how many times I've had users come in and we go, they're saying they're reporting problems with their phone. And I'm like, well, let's see where we stand. We've got about 6 or 7 months worth of updates, which means 7 updates, one after another.
Wow.
So, it's the one thing I think sometimes users are so used to this whole concept of the cumulative thing that they don't realize that these Android updates, the monthly securities, are cumulative in nature.
It's just one more way that Android is like the old Microsoft Windows. Because remember old Microsoft Windows?
Yep.
You would pull a new box out with your PC, and it may be sitting in your box for 4 months before you actually bought it. And the first thing it does is spend all day updating.
Well, that was my favorite game. It does the same thing with Android. My favorite Windows game, which used to be, all right, I've rebooted after my updates.
Yeah.
And there's more updates.
Yeah, and another reboot.
That I've done the same thing. We've had phones that users have, and this is no exaggeration, I mean, like close to a year, they've ignored. And then we've said, just leave the phone with us, because we've all day, we just had it on power. Yeah. We look over occasionally, time to put the next one on let it install and reboot.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, speaking of Windows updates, they were supposed to release a Windows 10 update like this month. I don't think that's happened yet. Is that right?
I had an update on one of my machines, I forget.
Was it a Windows Insider box, though?
I don't think it's 1803.
Yeah.
No, 1803 isn't for, if you're a non-insider, that's not out.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
Yeah.
So weren't they supposed to release it this month, though, April? And it's kind of...
The rumor was that it was going to be... They were going to start to roll it out at Patch Tuesday, and that hasn't happened. Other rumors I've heard and are common rumors is that there were some stopping bugs that they found last minute under certain circumstances, and they said they didn't want to risk rollout, but it's still April. We're only halfway through. So,
I really wish they would use minor dot number releases for their, it'd be a lot easier to talk about it, wouldn't it?
Well,
like, which version of Windows are you on? I'm on build 1709, and that means,
and I know exactly what that is. It's 2017, ninth month.
Yeah.
The next one is 2018, third month.
Yeah. Well,
it's month four. But anyway.
Well, the thing of it is, too, is, I would prefer something simple and consistent, but I guess we're still, and it's funny how many There's been no official confirmation on what it will be called from Microsoft. As a matter of fact, the cumulative updates that went out, the security update, actually showed it as, if you went into Windows Update, it was showing it as Microsoft version next. And the people had caught screen caps of it. You can find on the internet. And I saw it as version next. They're not saying what the name is.
Yeah.
People are labeling it the Spring Creators update. But then you immediately get into, okay, is that what we're going to just call them, Spring Creators and Fall Creators? Well, what about Spring Creators 2018 versus Spring Creators? Right. Yeah.
I'm going for Microsoft OS, MSOS.
I'm just waiting for, like you said, a simple, it's Windows 10, and then if somebody asks, it's 1803.
Well, you know, if they're going to call it Next, they're infringing on Apple's Next computer.
That's called, they were going to, they didn't put brackets and say insert name here.
Oh, just,
Well, they're going to have a little N, a big E, and a small XT, as opposed to the big N, little E. Totally different.
It'll be interesting to see what if anything when we finally do get a name on it. But yeah, it's funny because people have also talked about, well, the Xbox gets a spring update, a fall update, and yeah, it does, but it's not the same thing. At least not my. You know, there's a difference between gaming platforms and computer platforms. You know.
Okay, well, let's see. Next up, next up, we're going to segue into conspiracy views for a few minutes before we close up the podcast. And, you know, this is kind of odd because there was a guy, he died yesterday, his name is Art Bell, had a radio show on for many years called Coast to Coast AM. I only heard it once in my life. I don't even remember where I heard it. I was probably driving late somewhere in some city, and, this is before we had iPods and, you know, smartphones, and if you wanted to listen to something in your car, you either carried a CD for the CD player or you listened to radio. So I listened to radio, and this thing came on, and it was like conspiracy views for radio. apparently, this thing was on 500 radio stations in the U.S. at its peak, and he talked about giants, tribes of giants, and aliens from outer space. And he made no judgment calls on his callers. You know, you could call and say, I met up with this tribe of giants from the, from Mars. And he'd go, oh, really? How were they? Were they nice? I mean,
it's funny. I remember a couple of late night car rides hearing him. This was quite a few years ago.
Yeah, because he retired like over 10 years ago.
Yeah. It was a long time. And the thing I can remember was, you're right, he was syndicated all over the place. But I think it was only in his later years that he started to get a little bit more serious. But he always seemed to be more of the offbeat stuff.
Yeah.
It was almost like, I'm a late night DJ. What's going to keep people entertained?
Right.
And I don't know if he started to believe his own stuff or what it was. But you're right, it became more serious in his later years.
Yeah. And I said, I only heard that one show, but I was so impressed by this guy. It was a really fun show, that one I heard. And I looked him up in Wikipedia since I saw this article that he had passed away yesterday.
Yep.
I think appropriately on Friday the 13th, for him. And, it said that in addition to the callers, mostly, more or less anonymous, you would call them, or people, like you and me, regular people just called in, who happened to have met giants and things. They said he interviewed some pretty well-known entertainers like Willie Nelson and Merle Haggard and Gordon Lightfoot and George Carlin and Greg Bear, one of my favorite sci-fi writers, Chris Carter, creator of The X-Files, Leonard Nimoy, Dan Aykroyd, and let's see, there was one I wanted to bring up because I thought it was so interesting. Physicist Michio Kaku, who I think is at, where is it, NYU? But anyway, he's a pretty well-known physicist and some SETI astronomers. So, he talked to some pretty well-known folks in addition to his conspiracies type folks. Anyway, just wanted to mention it.
just one point of clarification on all of this, Todd. I do take offense to being called normal. I am anything but normal. You refer to all of us as normal. Average. No, it, like I said, I think a lot of those interviews, too, he was extremely popular. I remember that from when I heard him in his early years. And I remember hearing something about later on about he was covering a lot of, I think somebody at the time said a lot of oddities or something like that. Yeah. But he did sort of cover them, but it was more for entertainment. I'm just curious. I never heard him in his later years. I just wonder if he started to actually say, wow, I think I believe this stuff or something. But in the early years, it was more for entertainment value, which he was. It was great if you were on, you know, like you said, as a late night you know, person with nothing else but an AM radio was something to listen to.
Yeah, and you know, back in the days when I was traveling a lot, like I said, we didn't really have smartphones and things. And first thing I did when I got in a rental car was popped on the radio to keep me awake while I was driving to my hotel or something. So anyway, I assume he still has a lot of fans, and I'm sure he'll be. You know, he's been retired for a while. So, but anyway, I found that interesting. So that was Conspiracy Views Corner for this week.
Well, the true conspiracy view is the mothership came and got him.
That's right. That's right. But they can't see that. Yeah. Okay, anything else, guys? Anybody buy any new stuff aside from Jack? I have not bought anything new. I just paid my taxes. I'm not going to
buy anything. Did I mention I bought an iPad Pro?
Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
No, I did. I bought the 10.5-inch iPad Pro. Got the pencil with it and playing with it. I think you could probably – I think the – you know, that's an $800 drop in a bucket there. I think some of those Intel on ARM things would probably be a better buy for a lot of people.
How much was it?
Oh, it was close to 1,000 when you got to buy a pencil and you got to buy a cover for it.
Yeah, if you fully loaded, it's not cheap.
Don't have a keyboard. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, it really depends with the iPad what your usage scenarios are.
Absolutely.
At work, I carry my iPad Pro and I carry my Surface Pro. And the Surface Pro typically gets set up at my desk because I have two offices. So whichever desk I'm at, it's sitting there. The iPad Pro is what I use in class to read lecture notes, what I use for meeting notes, for just kind of quick email triage and all that with the keyboard. And it's funny because there is still a lot of misconceptions about the iPads. One of our administrators the other day was telling me, oh, well, you can't get any real work done. And I showed him Word, Excel, PowerPoint, and said, you know, it's right on there. I can open these documents the same as you can. And but it really is what you're doing. If you are walking around, sitting in different rooms, taking notes, reading notes as you're lecturing, the iPad, I think, tends to work a little faster, a little bit easier to navigate when you're distracted. But for getting things done at my desk, it's still the Surface Pro 4.
Yeah.
I think the one thing that I miss more than anything, I think I can do most everything that I do other than access, which I don't know why they don't have an iOS version of that. But the one thing I miss is a mouse or a touchpad.
Yeah.
You know, you have to reach up and touch the screen if you want to move something.
I don't know why there's not an access version for Mac.
There you go.
I think it's always bugged me,
Well, because they already punish hundreds of millions of Windows users, and they didn't want to punish the Mac and iPad users, too. You know, Frank's not here, but I remember when Frank was writing his Windows CE books and Windows Pocket PC books, and I was brought in as a technical editor to, you know, you kind of read after he wrote stuff and make suggestions and you know, things like that. And I remember one day Frank and I had this talk. I said, Frank, what the heck are you going to do with Pocket Access? It's like useless, you know? And we had a hard time thinking about what he should write because it's like, wow, this is like it's beneath a toy level.
what I did with it, I didn't use Pocket Access, but if you had Access and you had Active Sync, I don't want to scare anybody with that term anymore.
Yeah, please don't swear on this show.
But
this
is ActiveSync would move your tables over to a Pocket PC.
Yeah.
And you could write a very simple Visual Basic, you know, app that would get that data. So if you had data that you needed to move with with you, and you could do syncing and sorting and filtering and all that kind of good stuff.
Well, you know,
it was pretty useful, and that's all I really want to do with the iPad.
I don't know if it exists anymore, but back in the Pocket PC days, I was a real fan of Handy Base. I don't know if you guys remember that.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
But I loved Handy Base because I could do all that stuff cheaply.
Yeah.
And I even...
But you had to do it on the Pocket PC. I had stuff that I wanted to move back and forth. And
no, it worked on the... I had the desktop.
You could sync the database.
Yeah, you could, yeah.
And in fact, I had it set to export to XML. And then I wrote an XML interpreter, or not an interpreter, an XML translator on the web, like in JavaScript or something. And I had it build my web pages with it. So I would build my web pages from HandyBase on my Pocket PC.
Mm. Yeah, there's a lot of neat stuff.
I have a quick question.
It exists on an iPad.
Yeah. Sam, quick question.
Yeah.
How big is that Apple device that you have?
Mine is an iPad Pro 10.5 inch.
Yeah.
It's just barely bigger than a 9.7 inch normal iPad.
Yeah.
Because the screen is much bigger. Doesn't have as much bezel on it.
Yeah.
So if you hold up a 10.5 inch Pro and a 9.7 inch, you can stuff them together.
Couldn't tell the difference. Sure. Yeah.
Hard to tell the difference.
Yeah.
Sure.
I bought an iPad Pro 10.5 last.
I bought the 9.7.
Yeah, I bought the 10.5 last year because I foolishly bought the 32 gig version of the 9.7 the year before and ran out of space. So, yeah. But I love the 10.5. You know, I'm still going with my little Doodle a Day project, 400 and some odd days into the project. And so that's what I use every night, 15 to 30 minutes now. One doodle a night on iPad Pro. It's wonderful. The Apple Pencil's amazing. I've tried a whole bunch of different styluses to draw with an iPad, and it is far and away the best. There's nothing that comes close.
Yeah, it is good.
Everybody's getting new stuff. My whole thing's been playing around with trying to get more life out of older hardware.
Oh, John and I talk about that all the time.
Oh, well, I have an old Toshiba satellite that's actually, what makes it interesting, it's a 13-inch satellite Pro. That was their T135 series, which was surprisingly lightweight for Toshiba especially. But it's older, running AMD, an older AMD processor. So I thought, I'd like to really try. So as an experiment, I loaded up because for years it used to be if I wanted to get more life, I would run Ubuntu.
Yeah.
On something, and
sure.
Let me tell you, Ubuntu isn't a lot faster anymore. It's than Windows 10 is. It was actually kind of sluggish. I was surprised, but they put so much into Ubuntu Desktop now that it's becoming a little bit more sluggish. Now, I've done that. I also tried, and I don't know if anybody else has tried it with an older piece of hardware, Cloud Ready, which is basically Chromium OS.
Mm-hmm.
I did that, and it actually was functional, and you could get a fully functional Chromebook.
Oh, my gosh. What is that monstrosity you're holding up, Swin? What is that? Oh, it's a Toshiba satellite. Is it?
Yeah. Well, it's like I said, that's what I'm so used to with Toshibas are the monsters.
They're like 42 pounds. It's a 42 pound.
That was one of the original.
see, this one's one of the, this one's a smaller.
One of the original XP tablet editions.
Yeah. Tablet PC.
Everyone's going to go, and I am not digging out my 2008 Toshiba satellite that weighs about 20 pounds. So.
Do you remember oh my gosh, yeah. See, I had one, Sven, I had one of those at work, and it was very much the Toshiba. You could beat somebody with it into submission and then go do some work on it.
Yeah.
It was great. You could take notes in ink and then hit somebody and continue to take notes in ink, and there would be no damage to the device.
You could be hitting them and writing on their forehead on the tablet screen.
They were incredible. They were basically the first, they were like the tablet equivalent of the first Motorola cell phones.
Yes.
So, but so it was interesting. Cloud Ready works pretty well on some old hardware. But I will say, if you're looking for the fastest experience to extend the life the best, it's probably going the Cloud Ready way. Because like I said, Ubuntu just is, and compared to Windows 10, was kind of comparable.
The two things I did was I tried, I think, Mint Linux, which is a little lighter weight, or
Yep.
You know, and also instead of using whatever monstrosity of a GUI Ubuntu was using, because they dumped, what were they using? They're using something normal for a long time. And then they went with their own weird UI. XFCEs are what I think I put on. And that was super lightweight. And that seemed to speed it up.
Yeah, Mint is supposed to be better. Scent I wasn't too impressed with. Like I said, I had fun. I even tried Scent on it.
Which is Red Hat, interesting. Right? Isn't CentOS Red Hat derivative?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it was interesting because I can remember it used to be such a noticeable difference on older hardware, and it's just not the same anymore. But Cloud Ready was very snappy, and it gives you the full, it's Chromium, but it does give you that Chromebook kind of feel to everything.
Nice.
Which is good for, which is good for folks who are, are interested in the Chromebook experience. But are looking for it in, they don't want to buy a Chromebook. If you got an old piece of around, it'll work fine.
Yeah, in fact, I was kind of hoping that, I guess I'd have to wait for Frank. I was hoping that Jack would have bought the new Acer or whatever Chrome tablet.
I'm looking at it. It's not out. June.
Oh, okay. 10th, see, he's thinking about it.
I am thinking about it. I think that's a neat looking thing. It's a, almost a Surface Pro looking little Chromebook with a, attachable keyboard and stuff like that.
And 1 year into 1 year
I'm looking at the HP.
1 year since my purchase, I am still using my Samsung Chromebook Plus every single night. At home. It's not what I use during the day at work, of course, but you could actually.
Again, it comes back to what they use. I mean, I keep saying it. I almost wonder if once again, it's too late to turn the tide here in the U.S. Chromebooks in education are just, people are amazed by the numbers, the penetration. But you look at the use case and you look at what, our school district here uses them, and you look at the use case and you go, it kind of makes sense.
It makes a tremendous amount of sense. And from a management perspective, it got a problem. Refresh. Yep. Boom.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly.
Yeah. Boom. Okay. There you go. Back to normal.
It's going to be tough to get. And school districts are like government. Once you got them, getting them to change is like turning an aircraft carrier around. It doesn't happen easily.
Well, I'll tell you one thing that surprised the heck out of me, speaking of government, is how quick they've moved to Windows 10.
Yes.
Yeah. That is surprising.
From everything else.
Yeah,
there are people sitting around figuring out how to write justifications to leave something on XP or something because they've written an application that they just cannot get to work. But other than that, we had a thing where I worked is January 1st. That's it.
Well,
you don't
the
have
other thing,
10 on your desk. You're something's wrong.
When did the floodgates open?
1607, though.
When did the floodgates open for government suddenly falling in love with third-party cloud services? Granted, they got the certifications, but you would have thought even with the certifications and the government blessing that agencies wouldn't have moved as quickly. But it has really been amazing.
Well, and there's starting to be a bit of pushback to that. So I know in Mississippi, our state government IT guidelines were just revised, and a lot of state agencies are annoyed now because they did jump to the cloud so quickly.
Mm.
And now if you are storing data that's not on-prem, you've got about 350 guidelines that you have to follow and write exceptions for. If you're not on-prem, it's a little bit less. And so we've been, our IT department at our university has been thinking about, where at all possible, bring things back on-prem if we don't already have an existing cloud, clearance for it. And thankfully, we did move recently to Office 365. So a lot of the things for the programs that I run and for the groups that I am in charge of organizing the data for, I can store that stuff on Office 365 because we already have an agreement. So the little, Microsoft Flow applets and things you can build, at least give us some functionality, because it's becoming a very tough road for the groups in the state that have used cloud-based and are now having to justify why they're using cloud and not on-prem.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny because for a lot of them, I think they'd say, here's my money. here's my dollar figures.
Yeah.
Because once you move on, it's amazing. It's easy to cut a budget. It's really hard to get it to expand back.
Yeah.
And so it's interesting that you mentioned that, because I've heard some similar. And then the biggest problem is that, you know, okay, great. You went cloud. We cut your budget. Oh, we don't like the fact that you're cloud. Come back to on-prem. But, oh, by the way, you've got to live with the budget we gave you.
Yeah.
You know, and it's it's good. You know, unfortunately, I think it's how government is programmed to work.
Here's the money for a Mac Mini server. Have fun.
Yeah.
But not the high-end one.
Not the high-end one. Yeah.
Entry-level only.
Yeah. No, it's interesting. I remember about 3 years ago, I was at the Esri GIS conference in San Diego, and it appeared to me, I'm not entirely sure, but it appeared to me that, oddly enough, this is 3 years ago, 2015, the cloud charge appeared to have been led by the Department of the Interior. You know, the parks people?
Yeah.
And they had cut a government-wide enterprise AWS, Amazon, you know, Web Services cloud contract, and they were able to let any other agency within the federal government ride on it. And people were. Now, they specifically were interested in GIS stuff, but, you know, it doesn't matter what you're putting on it, right? I mean, from Amazon's point of view, you know, if your money is the right color, you got some service, you know?
Yeah, so, where I am, we're not doing cloud stuff.
Oh, it's interesting, too, because this also trickles down to
you. Premise stuff isn't in my state, but...
It's interesting, though, because when you think about it, it's not just the government, but it's those contractors, government contractors that have had to, you know, for a long time themselves keep on-prem, just to meet contract, you know, guidelines.
Right.
And now all of a sudden those are like, it's been interesting to see, because, you know, around, I can remember the old thing was, well, let's look at the, and that thing's cloud, forget it.
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden the same people are going, oh, well, let's see who, you know, what certifications do they have? And I'm like, you guys wouldn't even have the discussion, you know, a couple of years ago. Now you're almost eager to jump. And of course, those contract companies are, for a lot of them, it's the same thing we were just talking about with the government themselves. Yeah. It's, ooh, I can save money.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So anyway, before we leave off, and my audio file becomes too big. Before we leave off, I will leave one more conspiracy views thought with you, and that's this, and it's related to our cloud talk. So, you know, in old science fiction movies, inevitably, somebody would come to a dead planet, find, you know, remnants of the civilization's technology, boot up a computer, download the information to see what happened, and you know, get kind of a history. If we store everything in a cloud, internet's down, you know, the device to plug into will have no local data. Our civilization will be lost. Well, nobody will ever find anything.
Our civilization is already lost.
The cloud is just somebody else's computer. So they just have to find the right data.
They have to find the right one.
But when they land, they just walk into this old wooden shack with a, you know, a little computer. That won't happen anymore.
Wait, but were they wearing gold shirts or red shirts when they walked in? if there was red shirts, then you know that wasn't the right place and they were doomed.
Yeah, but it was blue shirts, man. It's a science officer's team.
Hey, Todd, I just sent the link.
Okay.
On the messages, and that's for you to look at, just because you do all the drawing.
Okay.
Will do. You might get a kick out of that.
Okay. Any rate, folks, thank you so much for joining us for Podcast 250. I know it's getting late where you guys are. Appreciate you taking the time, especially you, Don, on your birthday.
No problem.
Best of your family.
Yes.
Hey, where's Buddies? Where's the best Buddies, man?
Don and I will be up for another hour because there's one more period of the hockey game. It's 5.
Yeah, I just checked the score.
All righty.
Hey, okay. Well, thank you for having us on.
Will do.
Thank you.
Okay. I'm going to say goodbye, and we'll be used to 50.